Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. I took a little rest over the Easter holiday, so hence the delay in getting an episode done, which I am doing today, actually not at our kitchen island, but actually in my office in downtown Duxbury on another cloudy day with the ocean behind me. It's been a fun week. I appreciate all of the interactions and comments and suggestions and people who have come from far and wide for neuropsych evals and even doing consultations. This really helps balance out the other, you know, all the other work with doing testing. And I've been able to hire an office assistant, which helps me in getting things organized and working with my biller. So it's been a much needed thing, and definitely a blessing to have her. So as we go through, I go back and forth through clinical and non-clinical topics. I've alluded to this on multiple occasions. I don't know why it's taken me almost 3 years to even get to this. But today I'm going to focus on intelligence. And IQ testing. And intelligence is it's got a interesting connotation. It's very different than neuropsych. There's a little more fluidity in neuropsych abilities versus IQ, which tends to be relatively, I wouldn't say stagnant, but consistent and stable over time. And I do not do IQ testing with every individual, but I certainly do this depending on the nature of the referral question and what I'm looking for. I will do IQ testing, and I test whether it's IQ or not. I test from age 6 and above. I've said this before, early intervention, they have it down with their assessments 0 to 3, and 4 and 5, I personally and professionally think there's too many developmental factors and pieces that are and moving parts to really, I wouldn't hang my head on an accurate diagnosis. Maybe it could be the ballpark of things to monitor and be aware of, but 6 and above is where I start with testing neuropsych or if it's IQ. But you know, intelligence does have this like I said, this connotation about, you know, how smart I am. You know, you need IQ testing to belong to Mensa. I think there, you know, self-esteem can be tied very much to IQ, very different than neuropsych. I mean, pure neuropsych of looking like at a, you know, attentional systems and you know, memory systems and motor skills, stuff like that. I mean, it's more complex, but just to draw a quick parallel. But, you know, people say that their IQ is like 300. They have no idea what they're talking about. The scales don't go up that high. And, you know, Howard Gardner wrote a great book, and I think it's definitely worth mentioning and considering. In his title, I believe, is called Multiple Intelligences, and I think it's a great concept, and one that I think that has a lot of validity. And we, you know, intelligence, I think in its traditional sense was originated by Alfred Binet and Stanford Binet, and trying to weed out or identify intellectually deficient individuals in the Paris school system. And the Stanford Binet is an intelligence test. It's incredibly extensive, but it's one that is typically used for people who are on the very low end of the IQ spectrum or people who are on the very high end of the IQ spectrum. I have it. I know how to administer it. I generally don't give that assessment. But you know, Howard Gardner, he talked about, you know, musical intelligence and artistic intelligence and mechanical intelligence. And I think we've seen kind of a paradigm shift from, at least from my perspective, in the United States, where, you know, not everybody has to go to college to be successful. You know, whether that's the decision that a person makes. I mean, I chose that route. But I'm not great mechanically, but I'm smart enough to know who to call to get something done or where to take my car if it needs an oil change. But those are our different forms of intelligence, and I think I think we've done a better job of, you know, I don't think it's wrong to, you know, depending on a individual's passion and what they want to pursue. Our world says, you know, you need a certain level of education, a level of training, whether that's in the classroom, field experience, or, you know, combination of the two, is at least in just taking my academic trajectory. But I think, you know, the overemphasis on college has opened doors, pathways for kids, I think a lot, who, you know, they're not cut out for the traditional college track. That's why, like, you know, vocational schools and technical schools, you know, the world needs mechanics. The world needs people who do HVAC. The world needs carpenters. The world needs welders. And I don't think there should be any shame associated with that. I mean, I always tell people, like, all these degrees hanging on my wall. And that's just, I said, that just makes people think I know what I'm talking about. But, you know, the world says, you know, to do certain professions, you need to have a certain, and I think there's definitely truth to that. I would not want to get on an airplane with somebody who's only played simulator games. So I think there's, you know, some, you know, definitely validity depending on the profession. But, you know, the concept of having multiple intelligences and being intelligent in, you know, when Julie and I were, you know, remodeling pretty much every aspect of our house, what it turned out to be, you know, I was fascinated by watching the guys who did the HVAC and even the, you know, just the trim and the precision. And, you know, the times that we were blessed to go to Italy with my father when he was alive, and you're looking at these intricate structures of these buildings that are thousands, hundreds of years old and no electricity and the artistic, the beauty of it. And, you know, my times I spent in London and just seeing how all this stuff was done by hand, I definitely think that is somebody who's highly intelligent. You know, Michelangelo, in taking a piece of marble and carving out the David and being able to see that, and that's definitely intelligence. Those are things that cannot be measured by the assessments that we have. Those are things that are not picked up by whether it's the Stanford-Binet or the Kaufman assessment scales. The LIDAR is a test of nonverbal intelligence. I use the Wechsler scales, and that's kind of what I'm going to, you know, use as a reference point today, both the child and the adult one. And there is a new adult one coming out. And I actually have the first, I like to collect, like, historical things from the field of psychology, psychiatry. And I actually have the first edition of the first IQ tests of the Wechsler scales. And that was developed by David Wechsler. These scales take years and years and years before they're ready for publication. And I said, you know, the WACE 5 or the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Scale is the newest one coming out. But I've been using the WACE 4 for, God, since I was in school. And the WISC-5, which is the Wechsler Intelligence Scale for children, is the most current form for, like I said, children and adolescents 6 and above. So IQ is something that can be incredibly helpful, especially in when you're looking at it in conjunction with adaptive functioning. Now, adaptive functioning, I like using the Vineland. It is basically, it could be done from birth, and there's no age limit to it, and it breaks ability levels down from, like, receptive communication to expressive communication to, you know, just basic activities of daily living. And it's really helpful when you have an IQ score and use an adaptive behavior assessment like the Vineland in conjunction, because when you plug the IQ score in, it's able to give you an incredible amount of detail. So based upon this IQ level, this is where, you know, this is where somebody should fall compared to their same age peers, same age, level of education, socioeconomic status, gender, laterality. So it's, you know, IQ in and of itself is a very standardized process. And, you know, it's interesting because people are so curious about, like, what's my IQ? What's my IQ? And there have been times when I've made the clinical decision that I don't want to do IQ with you because I'm looking, you know, just doing this as long as you have, you learn tricks and you learn different things. I could maybe glance at scores quickly enough and see that, you know, I don't think your IQ is going to come up that high. And, you know, there can be a hypersensitivity because people do equate a lot about their self-worth with what their IQ score is. So one of the things I want to really emphasize is what are called confidence intervals, in particular when it comes to IQ testing. Now, in confidence intervals, this is basically saying I was trained and what I adhere to and what I would strongly encourage anybody who is getting an IQ test or if they're getting it done by the schools. I mean, I'm partial to saying that I don't think schools should be doing IQ testing. It's you know, the way we're trained in neuropsychology is very different. I'm not saying it's better. It's just different, and it's much more intricate when we kind of look at all the different cross-section analyses and compare all the different subtests against one another. It's a much, much more extensive process. And people, you know, the tests on the Wechsler scales, they yield what's called the full scale IQ. Okay, well, I was trained to use the 95th percentile for confidence intervals. And when you get a particular score, you can say with 95% certainty someone's score falls within that range. Say, you know, you tally up the score, and that's your raw score. And then you have, mostly pretty much all psychological tests, we have what are called standard scores. And standard scores are the statistical equivalent of a raw score. So it doesn't matter what you know, how many right or wrong somebody got. It matters to what that raw score equivalent is converted to. So when you're at the 95th percentile, I have a high degree of confidence that, you know, I already confidence interval, a high degree of confidence that this individual score falls within this range, maybe between, say, like between 100 to 109. Now you can also use the 90th percentile. So now the score could fall between maybe 92 and 115. All right. You can use the 85th percentile and then percentile. And now the score expands to, you know, 90 to 120. So as you decrease the from 95 down by increments of 5, somebody who may actually be at a borderline range could actually fall into an average range. And I've seen this, and I've recalculated on IQ scores, and I've seen this as a lot of a way for people to not get kicked out of getting government assistance or disability. And I've been to meetings and tried to articulate this to people, and even with other psychologists, and they sometimes get married to this score that if the score is, you know, below anything above 70, you're kicked out of any services for like Department of Developmental Disabilities, and they push you to Department of Mental Health. So, you know, understanding psychometrics is a field in and of itself that, you know, is very specific to my discipline in neuropsychology, but you know, just looking at, you know, the basic we take the, you know, the, you know, look at the just using the adult version, you have what makes up the full scale IQ is your verbal comprehension, perceptual reasoning, working memory, and processing speed. Those four dimensions, all of which have different subtests that load onto those different four dimensions. And basically the average of those four yields what's, you know, the full scale IQ. The full scale IQ is not nearly as important from my perspective as an individual's performance on the specific subtests. And this is where behavioral observations become incredibly important. So if you have, you know, I a lot of times will do non-standardized administrations because I want to make sure when you, you know, basically you're reading the instructions with the assumption, and we all know what assume means, with the assumption that the patient across from you understands what's being asked of you. And doing testing in and of itself is a process that I think, you know, I continue to perfect to create the most comfortable and relaxed and least judgmental environment, because, you know, when you're being tested, there's that assumption, you know, especially when you bring out IQ, there's that connotation of, oh my God, how smart am I, or how non-smart am I? So it's important to really be sensitive to this process. And I a lot of times what I'll do with non-standardized administration is I want to make sure that you understand exactly what the test is asking of you, what the directions are, because people, you know, it's like being in school. We don't want to raise our hands when the teacher would say, if you have a question, probably everybody else in the class has the same question. And that's why I have much more confidence when I'm doing IQ testing. And I think a lot of other practitioners do this as well. If you just read the instructions, just write down the score, again, you're making the assumption that the person understands with full certainty what the task is asking of them. So a lot of times in several of the various subtests have practice ones that are built into it. So, it's an interesting process. It can lead to, you know, you have to be more hypersensitive, I think, when doing IQ testing, because a person is kind of watching it. You know, if you've only given three questions and they've bombed all three questions, say, okay, let's go on to the next subtest. You know, people kind of inherently know that, hey, I didn't do too well. So you do your best to, you know, not have a person internalize this to a point where it's adversely impacting their self-esteem. But like I said, intelligence in and of itself, how we measure it is a very static number, and it yields a very static number. So, you know, what are the core subtests that make up, you know, from the adult scale is block design, similarities, digit span. So block design, you're basically giving somebody blocks and ask them to replicate, you know, put the blocks together to make it look like the stimulus that you're showing them. And even a stage three Alzheimer's patient who had testing, IQ testing, at some point in their life, they generally remember the blocks. Similarities, you're asking a person, you're saying two words and ask them to say, how are these two alike? Digit span is you're reading, you know, digits forward, digits backwards, and then digits, repeat them back from highest to lowest. Matrix reasoning, vocabulary, arithmetic, symbol search, visual puzzles, information coding. Those are your 10 core subtests that make up IQ. The new IQ, I glanced at it briefly because there's not much available on it, but it's coming out soon. It's pretty similar, but block design, for any guys out there, you know, if you're not familiar with like reading IQ tests, or you want... you know, if you want a quick view of IQ, block design and vocabulary, and you take the scaled score, and you take the scaled score and you multiply it by 10 of block design vocabulary, that is pretty, that's almost pretty close to what the full scale IQ is. So those are tricks that you learn as you go through the field. But I remember doing this, I don't know if it was my master's or I think it was both master's and doctoral program, administering this, and we administered this a lot of times. But there's different things that you're able to do that are really important that I don't see in a lot of IQ tests, the ones that I've reviewed. Is there's ways that you can do things to look at the data differently. Like, for example, you can pull out processing speed and say, if processing speed isn't a factor, is the person's ability level going to be higher or lower? And a lot of times, if there's a processing speed disorder, that will adversely impact IQ. So that can suppress, you know, the IQ scores, because the processing speed, those tests are timed. And a lot of the different tests in IQ are timed, especially the ones that have, you know, the perceptual reasoning and kind of the visual motor skills. Those are timed both in the child version and the adolescent version. So, you know, IQ in and of itself, I'm not going to go into this in you know, excessive detail, because it's so, you know, average IQ is basically anywhere between 90 to 110. Low average is 80 to 90. Borderline is 70 to 80, and extremely low is anything below 70, which would warrant a diagnosis in the United States within the current diagnostic statistical manual. It used to be called mental retardation. It is now called intellectual disability disorder. High average is 110 to 120, superior is 120 to 130, and very superior is 130 and above. But again, you're not getting into like ranges of 300. So again, I don't do this all the time, but I do this when it's relevant, and it's especially relevant in conjunction with adaptive functioning, because you can plug that in and it gives you a really detailed outline of what are the areas of strength and weakness, which could be incredibly helpful in developing a very comprehensive and very thorough treatment plan and plan of intervention, whether that could be post head injury, that could be developmental delay, that could be monitoring possible decline in the neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, any of the different types of dementia. So adaptive functioning is really important. And even with autism, you know, because it really gives you, you know, such a breakdown, because it's so comprehensive that it really breaks down, you know, here's where John compares to other people the same age. And it can be great for, you know, when you work with, traditional psychotherapy. It's great for people to work with occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, because not only able to identify what are just specific delays, like saying, like from IQ, you have, okay, verbal abilities are low. But when you get into like comparing that with like an adaptive functioning test, now you're able to get a more specific detail, really delve into the specifics of, from the general to the specific. So in conjunction, adaptive functioning with IQ, I find to be the most beneficial, the most effective when used together. But the over-reliance on just what that full-scale IQ is not nearly as important as what are the individual performances and what are the individual scaled scores, which are the standardized scores that make up those. And that's what we called, you know, it's called a critical item analysis. Similar, you know, what I'll do if I'm giving like a personality assessment, or any kind of assessment where someone's maybe rating different symptoms or psychopathology, I mean, I will go. It's not the level of, is it mild, moderate, or severe? Yes, that's important, but it's even more important diagnostically to look at the individual responses a person is giving you. And this is where, you know, when I give the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, you can really get into not so much, okay, this scale is elevated, but what are the individual responses that a person gives that cause the elevation, which is especially important in that test when if somebody has an elevation on the schizophrenia scale. because the schizophrenia scale, that measures so many different things besides psychosis, and it's really important to understand why that scale is elevated. Is it bizarre sensory experiences or mentation, or is it lack of ego mastery or other things that could be more mood driven versus true psychosis? So not to get into, I'll get into personality assessment in a different time, because I think a lot of people want to know about the projective personality test, which I really like, especially the Rorschach, the thematic gap perception test, the kinetic projective drawings, incomplete sentence blanks. Those are a whole different class of tests in and of themselves that's relegated more for, personality and psychopathology. And it's fascinating what those tests are able to give and the amount of information and what you're able to ascertain. That I think I've said this in other episodes, as many as I've given, and I am still fascinated and blown away by what those tests are able to do. And they're complicated, and they're require a lot of training to be able to administer them, especially the Rorschach, but incredibly, incredibly valuable information. So I at least wanted to touch on IQ, that it we have assessments to measure it, but I think we also don't have assessments to really measure all the other areas and abilities that people are smart in, like musical intelligence. I think Bruce Springsteen is amazing and incredibly intelligent musician. Same with like Lady Gaga in terms of musicians. Like I said, Michelangelo as an artist. People who develop, cars, and people who have developed, just inventors. So you don't need a college degree to be smart, and people can be smart in a vast array of areas in life. And the term smart, it has a strong correlation with intelligence and with IQ testing. Different than neuropsych testing, which doesn't necessarily have that connotation. But I was even trained, and I've seen this, that, IQ testing, interestingly, you can actually pick up psychosis. And that's because the demands of the demands of the IQ testing and the time pressure can certainly increase and exacerbate someone's symptoms, not necessarily making them psychotic, but it could bring out a disconnect from reality. So I was very fortunate to have amazing professors in my neuropsych program and clinical psych program in terms of doing testing. For me it's easy, it's second nature, but I would definitely recommend if you're having somebody tested that you definitely recommend that it's scored at the 95th percent confidence interval, because that will give you much more accuracy and a much better component. And if you are, if there are injuries or delays or decompensation or recovery from any kind of neurological insult, definitely recommend having adaptive functioning. There are other scales besides the Vineland. I just find the Vineland to be the most comprehensive. So hopefully this was helpful to kind of give you an overview on IQ. I think a lot of people say, "What's my IQ? Can we do it?" I do it. I mean, it's easy, but I don't find it, for the vast majority of cases that I see, that to be extremely relevant. But it is relevant, and I do it in those cases, like I said, where there's decline, delay, injury, and recovery process, because vocabulary is pretty crystallized, and there's some things that information is pretty crystallized, but block design and vocabulary, both the child and adolescent and the adult IQ tests, are the best predictors of someone's overall IQ functioning. So, and I can tell you, I have had plenty of sharp blocks thrown at me over my time doing this. So I don't take offense to it. It happens. It's part of the process. But hopefully this was informative, just kind of giving you a basic overview without getting into all the intricacies of how you score all this stuff and time bonuses and all that. That's not relevant. But I did really want to talk about the concept of multiple intelligences, because people are brilliant in many different ways. And that's, the beauty of, the human experience is, we're not You know, testing is you know, my passion and my interest, and I believe wholeheartedly in it. But I also believe there are people that, you know, excel in areas that, you know, we may label as like, okay, you didn't go to Harvard, so what? But you know, you could do these amazing projects and the, you know, construction and, you know, put a carburetor back together. And I think that's equivalent to somebody being, you know, really smart as measured by a standardized IQ test. So until next time, feel free to get a hold of me through psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. Get a hold of me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. And you can contact me directly, 617-750-9411, East Coast Standard Time in the United States. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and I will talk to you guys. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.